Hello and welcome to the season 4 premiere of the Desi Outsiders podcast. I'm Ankita.
And I'm Meena.
And this week, we are in conversation with Vidya Iyer, aka Vidya Vox, a singer-songwriter on YouTube.
Vidya is most famous for her Desi Western fusion songs, where she takes elements from her own Indian heritage and fuses them with the Western world that she grew up in.
Ever wondered what the iconic A.R. Rahman number Kandugonde Kandugondain would sound like when fused with Justin Bieber's Sorry?
Or what Charlie Puth's We Don't Talk Anymore fused with Pani Da Rang would sound like?
Go follow Vidya on social media to find out, but first, let's find out how she got to where she is today.
Welcome to the show, Vidya. I heard your music a couple of years ago at a friend's house, and I've been hooked since that moment. Your passion for your music really shines through your expressions and your voice, and I'm so glad that we have the pleasure to get to know more about you today.
Yeah, I'm so glad to be on the show and speaking with you guys today.
So, Vidya, your stage name is Vidya Vox, and that's how many people are aware of your music as well, but your full name is Vidya Iyer, and you were born in India, and then you moved to Virginia.
Right.
So, this might seem like a very simple and maybe even a silly question, but would you please explain to everyone why and how you went from Vidya Iyer to Vidya Vox?
Yeah, it's actually really simple. I was in India. So after I finished my university, I moved back to India because I wanted to like restart my music learning and all my studies there. And so I went back there, and so I really wanted to, you know, I've been having ideas to start this new channel because I was with, you know, recording with Shankar at that time. And then he was like, we were talking about what names we could name the channel. And I was like, oh, Vidya's music, Vidya's tunes, and all these like different ideas. And or I could just do it Vidya Iyer. And I was like, oh, that's too plain. So I was like really, you know, racking my brain. And then all of a sudden, it was actually Shankar's idea. He looked at the, you know, where we record, and every time he labels my vocals, he always labels, like on Logic, he labels Vidya Vox. And he's like, hey, you could just be Vidya Vox. And we looked it up, and like Vox actually means voice in Latin. And so he always does that for everyone, like anybody he records, he always names it like Vox or whoever Vox, you know? And so I was like, oh, this is like a perfect name. And that's how we like just named the channel and started that.
It's a wonderful name.
Yeah, everyone thinks it's my last name, and it's not. It's actually not.
So I know how orthodox Tamil Brahmin families can be, because I also grew up in Kerala, very close to a lot of other Tamil Brahmins myself. So the strictness, it's not just in terms of strictness, it's also in terms of, you know, being very pious and God-fearing and even superstitious to a large extent. So I'm curious to know, was it the same with your family when you were being raised in India?
Absolutely. And in the US too. You know, we only spoke Tamil at home, and you know, it was something that like we had to, you know, go to the temple and do all of that like every week. And we're also like followers of Amma. She's like the humanitarian and the hugging saint. She's
right.
Amazing. So, you know, so we went to her programs, and you know, I used to like not really love going to the temple or, you know, like singing Carnatic music or any of these things, because it was also like forced on me when I was like much younger. And I was, my sister and I would always find ways to like get out of it, or just like full goof off when we were there. But honestly, like looking back, I think it's such an amazing part of my life. And I feel like if, you know, I'm doing those things now voluntarily, you know, it keeps me really grounded. And so even though it was a little bit of a pain at that time, like growing up in India and in Virginia, like my friends would be like, what are you doing on Sunday? Let's have like a, you know, movie afternoon or sleepover. None of that stuff was allowed. But looking back, maybe, you know, it's actually kept me grounded. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, because Vidya, even my family were quite similar. They moved to Europe 30 years ago. And even, I mean, I wasn't even allowed to go to sleepovers or anything like that. And
yeah.
I think to a certain extent, now you start to realize why your parents did that, and you start to appreciate it. But obviously, at a young age, you don't understand the reasons behind it. And
right.
Even when I was younger, my mom was obsessed with putting tel in my hair, and I would go to school.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and I would go to school smelling like the Dabur Amla oil factory. And
I feel you.
And all the kids would ask me, like, why is your hair so shiny? And you just don't know what to say at that age. Like, you can't say, oh, I put oil in my hair. They just don't get it.
No one understood, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I didn't feel ashamed of my culture. It wasn't that. It was just awkward, you know? You just don't know how to respond. So you've mentioned in some interviews before that it was not cool to be an Indian in school. And kids would make fun of the dosa and idli you brought for lunch. So at any point in your childhood when you were growing up, did you ever feel ashamed of your roots when you first moved to the USA?
I wouldn't say ashamed, but I would definitely try and hide it because I, you know, there was like this one specific instance actually in middle school, and I'd brought chapati and rajma for lunch, and very nutritious lunch, okay, yeah. compared to like all the crap that is yeah. served everywhere else, like, you know, pizza and fries. So I'm, in retrospect, I'm very, very grateful to my mother, but she would, you know, and rajma smells nice. It smells really, you know,
it's not
nice,
when it's like, in a box, Vidya.
Yeah, exactly. No, yeah, that's right. So then when I opened it for lunch, and then like all these kids were just like, what is this? Like, it smells so gross, like all this stuff. So I got like really, really embarrassed. And I feel like that scarred me a little bit. And so since that time, I would just like eat lunch like before the lunch period, or just like try and beg my mom to get me like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Or just like those Lunchables. So there were times where I would just, and even in high school too, I ended up doing that. And then I actually like, you know, starting in high school, I had some Indian friends. So that was really great. You know, I would sit with them and they'd be like eating poha for lunch. And I'd be like, yeah, this is great. So we can, you know, we can do this together. But definitely in middle school and like beginning of high school too, it was difficult. And so that always, so I never really, you know, I never paraded around that I could sing like Indian music or I could do any of these things. I would, you know, go to Garba. I didn't do any of that. You know, I never told my friends of any of that. It was kind of like a secret life almost at home, you know? There's like a life at school where I'm like wearing jeans and being all cool and eating, trying to like always mooch off and get like the pizza and fries. But then at home I'd go and like eat idli and sambar and...
The thai dosadam,
yeah.
You were like the desi version of Hannah Montana.
Basically, actually. And then college is like when I started, then I had like only Indian friends. I feel like something happened to me. And then I was like only had Indian friends. And in college, it was just like, I didn't care. I was like, you know what? This is me. I'm wearing it on my sleeve. I don't care. And, you know, all my friends did that. So I did, you know, I was like part of the student, like the Hindu student organization, Satyam. I was on a Garba Ras team. It was like an intercollegiate, like intense thing. And no one believes me it was an intense thing. It was like a really intense thing. We had like practice every day. So we could, you know.
Was that intense Garba every day?
Yeah, every day from 8 to midnight. We had this amazing captain. And yeah, so we were like, that was my freshman year. So I started doing that. And so, you know, involved in the ISA and, you know, in the Bunger blowouts, just like so many things at GW. So there's like so many other people that would, you know, had the same heritage and sort of had the same story. And so in college, everyone was like, nah, I'm doing this. It's all me. You know, I'm not going to hide it anymore. And that's honestly what like helped me get out of my shell.
So Vidya, without trying to generalize, I just want to bring this up. I've noticed that a lot of energy and effort is put into the education and academic performance of kids who grow up in Tam Bram families. And you were also pursuing the path of medicine after completing your degree in psychology. So was this ambition to become a doctor a personal choice or a collective family choice? Because we have a doctor sitting there and she'd be quick to point out that she did not, looking back, she did not want to become a doctor.
I think it was a bit of both. I really love science and I still do. A lot of my friends.
Why?
I don't know. It's so interesting. And it was like the one thing I always excelled at school. I suck at math, but I'm really good at science. And so I really enjoyed it. And so, you know, I was talking to a lot of my family and they were like, oh, you should really consider doing, you know, pre-med. And, you know, I also love psychology. So that really worked. Like it was a really good fit. And so a lot of my friends who are like on residency now, I always ask them to like send me their papers or, you know, things that they've published or anything they find interesting so I can like keep up and read things. I know I'm like a secret nerd, but it's actually really fun. And, but although I must say, you know, I think that junior year is when I like started to have this like fight within myself, like music or medicine. And I don't know, music, as you guys very well know, music is not necessarily a stable or, I don't know, like a viable long-term kind of thing. And it's difficult if you don't have like a plan. And so that's, but I really wanted to do it and I loved it so much. And, but I stuck through with the whole pre-med thing until I graduated. And I even worked in a cardiology office for a year as a medical assistant, assistant person thing. Just like,
I'm glad you went into music video.
Yeah, I know, right? I know. So I'm like occasionally, yeah, so just like do stuff with like appointments and help, you know, shadow doctors and things like that. But that, then I was so miserable that I was like, no.
And while you were pursuing your psychology degree, you started your YouTube channel. So what was YouTube like then? Did you go in with a mindset of gaining subscribers and garnering a following, or did you just sort of do it just for your love for music?
Actually, it was Shankar's channel, Shankar Tucker. He's the one that like produces everything on the channel. And he was starting it. He was like one of the more like original people who started it for music in India. Like it wasn't, he was studying with Hari Prasad Ji at that time in India, and he just needed a way to like put his creations out, and YouTube was the perfect platform for that. And he was also very video centric. So he, you know, he really enjoyed showing like performance of like how it's recorded. You can see the musicians in like their organic element while they're doing it. And so because of that, he was needed like some vocalists for his song. He's like, whatever you song, you know, my sister and I, we grew up singing together. So that he was like, well, can you guys sing a song on my channel? So I was like, okay. So we just sang Nina Naindal, and that's how it really started. And so we did like a few more collaborations on his channel. And yeah, I didn't really start my channel until 2 years. I only was like 2 years old, actually. I only started it 2 years ago. But before that, it was on Shankar's channel mainly. And that was all like sort of directed by him. And, you know, he really wanted to do like the classical Indian with Western arrangements thing, which he's like amazing at. So yeah, and I really, really loved that.
And so Vidya, when Ankita and I got into this partnership to start Desi Outsider, I mean, we didn't know a lot about each other except that we had the same vision to create a new podcast. And is this how you felt when you entered into your partnership with Shankar, that you believe that he had the same sort of vision as you did for your music?
Yeah, and for him, it's so interesting because he has a really interesting story as well. And I think that his music really spoke to me in the way of, it just like reflected how I grew up. In a way, it's like just like a mix of the two worlds in such a perfect harmony. And I would always like think, you know, if I could just like share some of my like Indian culture or like my music with my friends, especially in like middle and high school, I would always think that. And, you know, and this, he was doing that, and being like an American person from who was born and brought up here, he was doing that because of, for his love for Indian music. And I was like, this is perfect. This is exactly how I grew up. And this is how I'm going to like marry the worlds together, is just like do these like mashup things. And yeah, it was that's how it's sort of organic, but it was also very planned as well.
And you were already quite successful in your YouTube career by the time you decided to pursue it full time. But again, going back to family, because I'm quite obsessed with Desi families, how did your family react to this? Were they afraid that you might deviate from a more sustainable career choice?
You know, thankfully, they've been like really supportive because what, you know, when they saw that, you know, Shankar's, the songs we did on Shankar's channel actually had some success and some visibility, you know, they were like, oh, this could be a thing. I mean, after I finished like my year at the cardiology place, I was like, you know what, I need to restart, because I stopped learning music in high school and college because, you know, academics took over and it's just the thing to do. You know, music is like a side hobby. So, you know, I had lost touch with some of my foundation. And so I really was like, you know what, Mom, I'm going to India and I'm going to live there. And we don't have any family in India, by the way. Just, I have one grandmother in Chennai, and that's it. All my family is in the U.S. Yeah. So I don't have that many, I have no family in India. So I was literally going to go, I moved to India, but Shankar was already there. So because of him, I was just like, okay, I'm going to move to India and learn with the teacher there. So I can just like be immersed in, you know, just the culture and like the same peers. And so I had like a lot of friends who were also, you know, doing music full time at that time. So I hadn't started my channel or anything. I was just there learning music for 2 years. And then when we moved back, I was like, I'm going to start my channel. So that's kind of like the timeline progression kind of thing. And so that's the kind of plan I had. And so I was telling my mom, and she was, of course, very, you know, shocked. But, you know, eventually, you know, she was like on board. Both her and my sister, my grandma, they've just been really, really supportive, honestly. So it's been great.
So Vidya, what exactly did you not enjoy about the classical music classes?
I think just practicing. That's honestly the most, I think. That was only when I was like up until like 11 or 12. It was something that, you know, every, you know, Tamil parent puts you in, like Bharatanatyam music.
I had that too.
Yeah. So yeah, see, you just have to do it. And, you know, so my sister and I would just go and we'd just goof off, or we'd just like practice like on the way there and just do these like we were basically the worst students. And then actually around like when I turned like 12 or 13, that's when I started taking it more seriously. And, you know, I really started enjoying it because I think I used it as a bit of an escape. And I did that all of high school too, even though I stopped learning halfway through of high school. I really did, like, anytime I was stressed, I would just like go practice. And then that kind of became sort of my crutch through, like, if I was having anxiety or if I was stressed out, it would always calm me down. So yeah.
You know, I also had these Bharatanatyam, Kuchipudi and classical music classes with you growing up.
Yeah.
And I personally used to hate my own classical music training because, you know, I trained for 4 years and I could not sing to save the world. You know, sometimes with practice, people get better. But I think that's what happened with me. With practice, my voice just learned to adapt to, you know, the pitches and the singing and everything. But I cannot sing. I'm really not cut out for singing. But you also initially did not like your classes, but now classical music plays such a huge role in your career. So what made you gravitate back towards it when you were in college?
I think that when we, you know, it was just so organic. Like I was in my dorm room and Vandana was over and Shankar was visiting and he was just like, hey guys, can you please just be part of this video thing that I'm doing? And I was like, okay, whatever. And he's like, what's your favorite song? And Nina Nayanthal was our favorite song. And that's the one song we used to like sing at every, like, you know, when you used to go to like these aunties' houses or like get togethers, they'd be like, my mom would always be like, Vidya Vandana, please sing a song. And I'd be like, oh my God. So we had this like one go-to song that we would sing, which is Nina Nayanthal, everywhere we went. And so it was really our favorite song. And I really loved that raga. So, you know, so we just sang it, and you know, ever since that, and I just loved Shankar's arrangement of it specifically, honestly, because I've only heard it with like mridangam and violin before that. And the way Shankar arranged it, you know, I remember when I heard his like demo back to us, like his like kind of like rough arrangement of it, I was so blown away. I think I was like crying because I actually was crying because it was just so beautiful. And that's when I was like, you know what? Also, he's a genius, which is like a different story. But actually, that's what made me like really fall in love with it at that time, you know? And I was like, it can be, because it's difficult to listen to, you know, that's like the one feedback that I get from like all my friends who don't understand Indian classical music, that they always say that it's difficult to listen to, especially if you don't know what you're listening for or what you're listening to. So unless you're already like learned some of it or have a background in it, someone who doesn't, it's very hard for them to listen to, you know, like really intense like thons or sargams or, you know, any of those kinds of things. So Shankar made it was accessible and kind of like a, not like a dumbed down version, because it's still, his versions are still very like musically complex, but it's so easy to listen to Indian classical music when it's arranged that way. So, you know, like with orchestra and piano and, you know, so that's what makes it special, I think. And that's what made me really fall in love with that.
And you also confessed that you've always been a big fan of pop music, even when you were training in Indian classical music. And the thing with my family is that whenever I listen to Western songs, and I say this in quotes, sometimes the elders in my family would look down on it. You know, a big chunk of my family.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're devoted to Sai Baba.
We have the same family. Are you?
Yeah. So like there's a big chunk of my family that's devoted to Sai Baba, and they play bhajans all day at home. And one of my cousins, who sings really well, and she's trained in classical music as well, she once told everyone, mm-hmm. she sort of boasted that she refused to perform a pop song at school because she'd only use her Ooh. Musical talents for bhajans.
So, oh, wow. Yeah.
So there's this general air of Indian classical music and bhajans are always superior to anything Western. You obviously faced that growing up as well, I assume.
Oh my God, so much. It's like they're just like bougie music people. And I think it's like so lame because music is so subjective and it's so relative, you know, like maybe one day you like pop music or also pop. That's such a broad term. We can't use that, but it's like, whatever you listen to rap one day and the next day you might be into R&B or you might be into bhajans or you might be into Hindustani classical. You know, I feel like it's so relative and it's so subjective. And it's sad that people put, you know, such restrictions on it of like, or like good and bad, because technically it has like a different connotation for everybody, you know? And so it's something that definitely I've experienced, and then I actually got my family to listen to, you know, like Western pop music after I started doing the mashups. Now my mom like knows all of these people. She like knows who Katy Perry is. Like literally one time my grandma, she like loves Ellen, and she was like, Vidya, I saw Harry Styles and he was telling, Ellen was asking who he was dating. So like, it's kind of like gotten to that part now, which is a really cool thing, you know? So I think it's just about really opening your mind, you know, because there's good music everywhere, and there's also, but that's also so subjective, you know, something that you guys might like, I might hate, and vice versa, you know. So I feel like saying that kind of stuff is like pretentious.
Yeah. And Vidya, your fusions are quite unique, and you know, the transitions from Desi songs to Western pop songs in one piece, they seem to be very seamless. And do you do it by ear, or do you have a process or a system in place to create such music with such beautiful transitions?
Thank you. I think there is a process. It's actually kind of like a puzzle. You know, you have, so it has to be in the similar like scale and tempo, like has to be either major or minor. And then the tempos no tempos are going to fit perfectly, but one song is going to have to be able to like loosen up a little bit on the tempo. And then once you have those like general rules, you can basically mash anything together up. You know, so basically, but even those rules, like sometimes it doesn't work, you know, the feeling doesn't work or the lyrics don't work together. So, you know, out of all the songs that we've done on our channel, there's probably like two songs for every song that we've done that haven't worked, you know? So it really just, it's like a trial and error process. And before, when we first started, I used to like sit in the studio because Shankar produces everything. So it's a lot of it's also his production, I think, that makes it work. But he would just like sit there and we would just be there for like 3 days trying to, you know, get something to work. Like,
wow.
You know, and we would take breaks from it and then be like, okay, come back to it. It's still not working. So the lesson kind of is, if it's not working in the first hour, it's not going to work on day three, you know, no matter what you do to it. So it has to feel natural is like the thing that I've learned with mashups. Yeah.
And where do you usually get your inspiration from, Vidya? Because, you know, I was watching a documentary on Netflix the other day about Lady Gaga, and she says that writing music is like doing open heart surgery. You know, you need to find the points in your life which has caused the most pain to make you the best music. So do you have to be in some sort of emotional or mental state to create the music or to create the best music you can?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's definitely, especially if I tend to write like more mopey songs, which is like sad. I don't know why, but I do. And, you know, I have had like a lot of like lost friendships and broken relationships in my life, just in general, growing up with family as well. And it was really difficult. And especially in high school, we went through like a really difficult time. And so I usually just like refer back to that. And I really try, like a lot of it has just like been erased from my memory. And so especially like writing songs, like thinking about that is like really difficult for me. But, you know, I think that I do have to go there, and I'm not afraid of going there anymore. That's the thing. That's what I've realized in the past like 6 months. In the beginning, I was like, you know, especially when I sat down to write the EP, we were like, you know, I want to write so many of these songs. And there were a lot that didn't make the EP, but I had to just go there and then not being afraid of being sad for a day or two or like mad or angry, you know, and then like really write it, because otherwise it doesn't feel authentic, you know.
And when you did go back to these places and try to write about what you experienced, did you ever feel that it was maybe therapeutic?
Yeah, that's another thing. It is. And it's actually really difficult to put, you know, into words your anger or your sadness or your, you know, your hurt. I think it's really difficult to put that in eloquent words, and much like harder even to put it into a song with rhyme and you know, and beats and all that kind of stuff. And so it's crazy. So it's like starts off like my, basically my writing process is, yeah, I just write stories. I just like write my memories down. And then I like pick out the common themes. And then from there, I, you know, just like come up with a melody or some kind of tune and then like fit words to it somehow. And so in that process, it's like, I don't know. I feel like it definitely gets like filtered down a little bit, but it still remains authentic. You know what I mean? It's like, it's still really difficult. It's difficult to do that. So I feel like songwriting is like, you know, people who have been doing it for decades are like such masters, because it's tough. You can't just like do it from, you know, whatever. So.
And all your videos, even from the very beginning, based on what we can see now, they have such a high production value and clearly a lot of effort goes into them. So how did you go about putting a creative team in place to make this happen?
Oh, it's just me and Shankar.
Wow.
Yeah, it's literally just us. And he is really good. The good thing is like he learned a lot of things the hard way from his channel and doing his albums. And so basically whatever he did wrong, we then did not do with my channel, which was really, I'm very thankful and very, very, you know, appreciative of that. And so basically I took a credit card and I bought a new camera on it. And I was, I couldn't afford a credit card. Like a new camera. I was like living in Mumbai, like learning music, you know, that's not, you know, I wasn't really working. Mm. So then we basically just, and he would shoot all the videos, and he had some equipment from his old videos and stuff that I borrowed. And so he would shoot the video. I would edit it. He also edits, of course. And then, we grade it and then we put it out. That's kind of like the short version. Mm-hmm. So it's just the two of us. And then, but recently we've added like, you know, when there are dancers or, you know, when they're like a little bit more, like concept videos, or like specific location videos, we add like a crew. So it really depends.
But yeah. Did you get any external funding initially? Like when you mentioned you have dancers sometimes or locations, you need a little extra funding to be able to do what you do.
Oh yeah. we had for that one, that was for Diamonds, and we did have a sponsor, which was really nice. It was like an events company. So that was really great. So then we can pay the dancers, and especially once we moved to LA, there's just like such a wealth of resources here. And just so many people who are just so good at their jobs and what they do. So it really wasn't difficult to find that team if we wanted to go like really large, like Diamonds was like a huge shoot. I mean, huge in our terms, you know, because from two people, you add like 14 other people to the crew. So then it becomes really big. So we can do that, or we can still, you know, keep it like just me and Shankar and like a dancer, you know, which is what we did for some of the other upcoming videos. So it's still like, it still goes, you know, either or. So it's like, so we still have like funds to pay for like a small video where we don't need sponsors. And then it's like a huge crew, then definitely.
Yeah. And when it comes to set design and costume design, do you have a team that does it for you, or are you the one who's heavily involved in all this?
No, I do all the costume design. I do everything.
I know. Vidya, you know, I was reading your blog today and I was just telling Ankita, like, this is amazing.
It's like a fashion blog.
That's so embarrassing. I've been like updated in like a year. That's so embarrassing.
Well, I say reading your blog, but I was just looking at your pictures. So,
you know, the other day I was just cracking this joke with another friend of mine. When we were really young, when we were in seventh grade, this friend, she came to an exam and none of us were prepared. And to calm her down, her mother had said, don't worry, dear child, you not being prepared and the other kids preparing is pretty much the same thing. And this kid came to class and said that. And we were all like, okay.
Oh,
yeah, so I get the feeling that you not putting in any effort into looking good and us trying to look good is the same thing.
No, that's, you guys are being too sweet. Though that's not true. But actually, you know, with the blog, actually, I don't even think anyone read it. So you guys might be like my two audience members that reads that. So thank you.
So Vidya, when you shoot your videos, you know, you really have a presence. You have your eyes, your voice, the way you connect with the camera. I think that is another talent in itself. So did you find that difficult at the beginning when you, you know, stood in front of a camera and acted like you were singing?
Yeah, you know, it's for when we were doing like Shankar's videos, those are actually the real recording sessions. And as you can see, I probably like no makeup, didn't do any of my hair. And, you know, so from there, I felt like natural, you know, so even though I'm like already have pre-recorded the song, because I can't be like recording the song in a forest. That's not real. If you think that's real, that's wrong. No one does that. So, you know. When we did that, I just still like actually sing the song. Like I'm still singing, you know, like I'm still there and I'm singing. So I just forget that the camera's there, to be honest. And I don't know, I'm just like comfortable somehow. Wow. I know that's a terrible answer, but it's true.
No, but you know, actually, Vidhi, as I mentioned at the very beginning, when I did watch your first video, I've been hooked since then. I think that was the first thing that really stood out to me, was your presence in front of the camera, because it felt, I mean, it still does, obviously, feel so natural, and you're really into the music. And I think that's what attracted me to your music the most. Another thing that I was curious to know, Vidya, is that your Hindi and your Malayalam pronunciation is pretty amazing and very impressive.
Oh.
So are you fluent in both these languages?
No, I'm not. Oh. But actually Hindi, because, you know, when we were living in India, we used to live in Mumbai, actually. We lived in Chennai, but we also lived in Mumbai. I'm only fluent in Tamil. And Malayalam is because, like, even though I'm from Chennai, my family's from Palakkad, you know, like in Kerala. So we're Palakkad Ayers. And so because of that, like, my grandmother, my mom, they all speak fluent Malayalam. I'm the only one really who can't. I can still understand, but so for those songs I always check like with my grandmother or my friends, or I have a lot of Malayali friends, so yeah, I check with them to make sure that that it's, you know, good, because it's offensive if you don't. I mean, it's still not perfect. I can improve on it, definitely, but you know, I always make sure to the best of my ability at that time, you know, that I record it well enough. So yeah, it always goes through a few checks.
And you express your creativity, like we mentioned earlier, that not only through your music, but also in your appearance, be it your hair, your attire, your accessories. And you already shared that you are your own stylist and you use your items from your own wardrobe in your videos most of the time. But I really want to know more. You know, some of these attires, they look like they were specifically put together or stitched for a song. And most of them have very obvious Desi motifs in them. So how do you put together a new outfit every 2 weeks?
I know, it's crazy. I own a lot of some of the things, like, you know, like in Sapno Ki Rani, for example, like I really wanted to just like find something to wear, but then I had this old Pavarda Dhavani of mine. And so then I just wore the skirt and then wore a crop top with that, you know? So I try and just like, I don't know, it feels natural to me. That's how I don't dress like that intensely in life, because I'm not that crazy, but but if you do, that's fine. But you know, I do like genuinely already do that. You know what I mean? Like I'm always just, I have like, if I have like the bottom of like a lehenga, and then you wear it with like a t-shirt and like a big necklace, and you know, like I feel like that feels natural to me. And
Fusion's not just with your music, the fusion's also in your clothing and attire and everything.
Yeah, it's very much thought out. Yeah, I never just like wing it for the clothes, because
you say it in such a blasé way, like, yeah, you know, we do think about it, but it just looks as if it's so done so naturally.
Yeah, it is natural, but I also need to plan it, because I don't know, I feel like I hate just like showing up to shoots and just like not knowing what I'm gonna wear, or you know, it always also, if I feel good and I like, you know, look good, then, or if I feel like I look good, then it feels natural. Then I'm not like conscious about or stiff or any of those things, you know. So if my clothes are already where I want them to be, then everything else I just have to focus on is like the performance, you know. So yeah.
And when you were at university, you joined an Indian dance club as a way of returning to your Desi roots at that age. And now your videos feature you even dancing in coordination with your team. And does the practice and shooting take a bit longer now? Because now you roll out videos every 2 weeks. So what's the system you have in place to manage your time?
Yeah, recently, once we released the EP, I actually am just working on the original videos. So those are taking a little bit longer. So for example, Diamonds actually ended up taking 2 months because, you know, we did do one day and then we realized that actually we needed better footage and more like footage that had like better lighting. So we went back to the desert on after a month of like really like planning it out. And then I was like rehearsing for a whole month with like my choreographer and, you know, with the dancers in the studio. And even though it like looks like it's really fast, I put up like this behind the scenes, like a few weeks ago, and it's just like a 1 minute behind the scenes. And I was like, oh my God, this video took 2 months and I literally have 1 minute of footage of just like showing what I did. But yeah, I do. It definitely takes much longer. Now. And so I just have to, that's why I try and like plan much in advance. I try not to do, even though things are always going wrong last minute or I'm always doing things last minute, that's always there. But especially with the dancing and stuff, and my choreographer, Kavita, is amazing. And she is also like really good about planning things in advance and keeping me in check. So I don't forget things. So she's always like, yeah, we have rehearsals. So like all these rehearsals that I had, like, you know, I have today or if coming up this week or were planned like 2 months ago, you know, so it's very much like already set in place and we're always working on new things together. So yeah.
You know, Vidya, I'm a Malayali and the first video of yours that I saw quite fittingly was Kuttanad and Punjile.
All right.
Yeah, that was the very first video of yours that's how I became a Vidya Vox fan and I subscribed to your channel.
Oh.
And the way you were enunciating the Malayali words and you were the lyrics of the English half of the song, all of this just had me convinced that you were a Malayali. Now I know that you're a Palakkad Malayali, but when I was researching, yeah. I thought you were a Chennai, a Tamil Brahmin. That's how your Vidya Iyer. So what's the story behind those lyrics, though, the English half of the song?
Well, Kuttanadan is actually a song that I've been hearing since I was a kid. Actually, Shankar, too, because we both are, you know, because we've been visiting Kerala and also our families are like devotees of Amma and, you know, and so they sing it at her programs. Right. And so because of that, so it's something that we've listened to since we were kids. And so when we were thinking about what emotion that song evokes, and I was always like, it's nostalgia. Like anytime I listen to Kuttanadan, I'm always thinking about those, you know, programs or, you know, our visits to Kerala when I was a kid, like going to the temples. And so that's kind of how we started out. And so then we wrote the English lyrics around it. So it's kind of like, but then we moved away and, you know, we don't come to Kerala as often as we'd like to and things like that. So that's kind of like where the inspiration came from. And it felt like perfect for that song. So,
and you know, Vidya, when I first heard this song, I mean, I'm not Malayali, I'm not from south of India, but when I heard your song, it made me feel like it gave me something in my heart that I wanted to go back to India as well. So even though it wasn't Malayali, and I couldn't relate to the word specifically, but when you were singing the English part of it, it still connected with me because I was like, man, I want to go back to India now because you're saying, you know, take me back to my homeland.
Yeah.
And just the way everything was set was so beautiful. And I think having that English part also means that you're not alienating other Desi listeners or any other listeners. Right. So I think you did a great job with that.
Oh, thank you. And I think there's so many of us that have the same story, you know, our parents moved and we're first generation immigrants or wherever it is, Europe or US or Canada or, you know, so many, and people have had that for generations, those stories, you know, met people in like Mauritius and Reunion Island and like Suriname and, you know, they're like generations of immigrants. And, you know, so that's, I feel like that's why I kind of wanted to write that song because it's very much like our story, you know.
And how did you come up with a specific folk-inspired fusion? Because this was your first folk fusion, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was actually. Yeah. I don't know. We just, Shankar was like laying down the track for it. We sang the, you know, all the Kuttanadan part and with the Dittitharas and then And then he was like, you know, brainstorming some tunes. And then and we kind of just like fit it to the, we just like wrote the lyrics with that. It just felt so natural. We actually wrote it in 3 hours and because we had to shoot the next day. So we didn't even have a song. So I sent it to the Mohiniyattam dancers the night before. And so they choreographed everything like that morning. And so, yeah, it was really, I felt really bad. They were really, really sweet. And
just, Are you serious? Yeah. You managed to produce that in such little time?
Yeah, because we were on tour in India. We were doing like a bunch of shows there and we were going to Kerala and I was like, oh, why ever go to Kerala and relax or do anything? Just, we have to shoot a video anywhere we go. Yeah. So we were like, so then Shankar basically produced that literally in 3 hours. Jomi played the Erdika and the Ganjira on it and the tabla on it because we were touring together. So yeah, the same night we just recorded everything in a hotel room and yeah, that's when we really did that.
You know, now I know why you say Shankar is a genius.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Same thing for Palivala. Same thing. I don't know how it happened that we ended up in the exact same situation. But this time we had it's Jomi's hometown, right? Cochin is Jomi's hometown. So he knows everyone. So he's the one sort of like producing the shoot in the sense of like, you know, coordinating people. And so this time he was like, oh, we should do it like much bigger than Kuttanaran, right? Because we just kind of did it. Those were his like best friends from home, like in Cochin. Like it was their wives, basically. Right. So he like roped in everyone he knew. And so everyone kind of just did it for fun. And then after that, we were like, oh, we should plan it out more. So then Jomi had like, no one knows the song yet, but Jomi's like, we need a Kathakali dancer and we need the girl Kathakali dancers and we need the two dancer and doing Bharatanatyam this time and all of these things and like a Chandamerlam and everything. And that's all we need. Like, that's all we knew that we needed. And then Shankar was like, okay, so now I have to fit a Chandamerlam and I have to fit like all of these things. And then it was actually Jomi's idea to do Palivala. So yeah, and that's how we did that the night before. Again, 2 a.m. Jomi was recording the Chanda parts in the in the hotel room in the Le Meridien, actually. Just like literally sitting there. And it happened.
And Vidya, there is an ocean of unexplored and nearly forgotten folk songs that maybe you can revive this way. So do you have any plans to continue doing fusions like this?
Yeah, there is working on a Telugu one, actually. Definitely going to do one more like Malayalam, I want to do like an annual Malayalam folk song because it's just, I love doing that. And it's just so cool to, I don't know, it, you know, I breathe some like a different light and fresh air into them.
I'm really looking forward to that.
I know. So hopefully, yeah, and probably going to write it the night before again. I don't know. This is always happening. Even though, I'm already planning, like I know I'm going to do one, but I already, by the time I get to it, it's just going to be like, oh my God, the shoot's tomorrow. We don't have a song. So,
You know, Vidya, once upon a time in Bollywood, when it was pretty much A.R. Rahman who was at the top, there was always this deep-rooted classical influence no matter what the subject matter of the song was.
Yeah.
And nowadays, the music is shifting to infuse rap, hip-hop, and even focusing more on dance numbers, maybe because they sell more. So how do you personally feel about the current Bollywood music?
Ooh, that's a very interesting question. It really depends. I do like a lot of it. I think there are also like a lot of, female singers, you know, that like, you know, Jonita or Shirley, you know, people who are like really, who are doing really amazing, you know, just having the same story of like being abroad, but then, you know, wanting to be in touch with their Indian roots. And so I think that stuff is really cool. And, I think it's great. I think, you know, as long as people are willing to, you know, move it forward in the right way. And, you know, I think it's okay to just like totally have different influences and, you know, and like mix all the different cultures. Cause like technically our world is so small, you know, with the internet and social media. I mean, there's no reason that you can't, you know, infuse another culture or another style of music, you know. And I think that Indian classical music is going to be around no matter what, what happens in Bollywood or
thanks
wherever.
To people like you, though.
Well, I mean, I think it also, there are a lot of like, you know, people, a lot of my friends actually who still sing, you know, who only do Carnatic concerts or Hindustani concerts, you know. So it's definitely going to stay alive no matter what. You know, I think same way the Mozart or Beethoven has stayed alive for centuries, you know, it's the same way. So, so yeah, I think that if, no matter what happens in like Bollywood right now or where it's going, I think as long as people are able to keep an open mind and, you know, it's fine. There's room for everybody, I think.
And do you have any current Bollywood favorites that you're planning to work on?
Currently, to be honest, I have not been keeping up with the Bollywood music, because, well, right now I'm just like working on a lot of our own original songs. So I haven't been really listening to, I'm not really working on mashups at the moment. Yeah. I'm just doing like, I want to do like the videos from the EP and, you know, and we have like one whole, you know, kind of want to do like original songs in like Thumra or, you know, like things like that. So I'm trying to just like move it towards that sphere. I think covers and mashups are awesome and I'm definitely going to be doing them here and there. But for now, it's definitely the focus is original music.
And if you had to pick a favorite from your own music, which one would you choose?
You can't do that to me.
We did that to Jayashree Mishra when she came on the show. We asked her to pick a favorite book as well.
Oh, really? Oh, my God.
Okay, we'll make it easier for you, Vidya. Who's your favorite? Ankita or Mino?
Oh my God. See, now you guys are making it even harder, guys. I'm sick
right now, Vidya. I think I need you to pick me right now.
And fellow Malayali. Well, I'm not really Malayali. I'm like, to wanna be Malayali. Well, I can't tell. But actually, in terms of, I like every song for a different reason. I think right now what I've been dancing to and stuff is actually Tamil Born Killa. It's from the EP, and I really enjoy those drops and it's the choreo to that is really fun. So I'm also like working on a concept video for that. So I'm really like listening to that song a lot right now.
And Vidya, you're on tour right now. So what is that like?
It's insane, but I'm enjoying it. I do have like bouts of anxiety where I'm just like, oh my God, I'm gonna die. No, it'll be fine. But that's kind of like how I do. I'm just be like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, it's gonna be, cause there's a lot of back to back dates and I don't, unfortunately with those and the jet lag and stuff, I haven't been sleeping as much. I mean, these couple of weeks are okay because I'm home in LA and, you know, just rehearsing and things like that. But on tour itself, it flies by really fast, but there's also a lot of pressure, I think, to, you know, like be the best and be perfect. But even though I try not to like think about that, because technically I just like every time I get on stage, like for the first like 1 second until I start singing, there's always like a little bit of nerves. But then after that, once I'm on stage, I'm just like, oh yeah, as if I'm just like in a bedroom and like dancing in the front of my mirror by myself kind of thing, you know? So that's kind of, I mean, it's definitely crazy, but I'm enjoying it. I have dancers with me on stage and you know, my band, and my mom gets to travel with me, which is awesome. And my sister, she sang Parivali with me. So she's like the feature singer. So that way it's really fun. And so for my India tour, my grandma's going to come. And so that's like that kind of stuff. I'm making it a family affair, which is really nice. So that's.
So if there's someone listening right now who wants to come see you on tour, how can they go about that?
They can either check out my like socials. I post all the, you know, events on there, or I want to say website, but I actually haven't updated my website. So that's a fail, but definitely, either my Facebook page that has like all the info to the tickets, and all the dates, and then, or my, Instagram or any of those things. So they can like keep up to date with that.
And Vidya, I was going to ask you, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, where can they find you? And I guess the answer will be exactly the same.
Yeah, on your social that's media. Exactly the same. Yeah. Tweet me, Instagram me, Facebook me. Yeah.
And finally, Vidya, before you leave, do you think you could make the sick Mallu in me happy and all our Malayali listeners as well by singing a few lines of Kuttanadan Punjeve?
Oh, okay. Only for you, Ankita. Only for you.
Thank you. Wow. I feel so left out.
Wow. Okay, also for you. Also for you, Mina.
Oh, thank you, Vidya.
Okay. Mm. கொட்டு நாடன் புஞ்சையிலேது தேதகதை தேதம் கொச்சு பெண்ணை கோயில் அழைதித்து தரதேதே கொட்டு வீணம் குழல் வீணம் குரவ வீணம் கொட்டு வீணம் குழல் வீணம் குரவ வீணம் ஓதித்து தாராதித்து தேது தேதகதை தேதம் You guys can sing with me. தித்து தாராதித்து தேது தேதகதை தேதம் தித்து தாராதித்து தேது தேதகதை தேதம்
Thank you. Brilliant.
Wow. Vidya, I think that was the best collaboration you've ever done with me and Ankita on Desi Outsiders.
You guys were great. Definitely next video, calling you guys.
That was amazing. So if you want to connect us to Shankar, feel free to do that.
Definitely.
Yeah. Not only can we not sing, I'm sick on top of it. So thank you so much. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us while you're on tour, Vidya. This has been so delightful.
No problem. Thank you, guys. Thanks for, like, you know, hanging and chatting with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, come out to my shows if you are near me anytime. If not, I'll be in touch with you guys for sure.
Fantastic. Vidya, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, I really appreciate you guys. Thank you so much for having me. I'll talk to you guys soon.
And as always, thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in today. Vidya is a sensation in modern music, and she does a hell of a job creating unique music for all of us. She's also a lovely human being, as you've already seen from this interview, so be sure to show her some love on social media.
And don't be surprised if you see Ankita and I collaborating with Shankar Tucker and Vidya Vox anytime soon. But you can follow her at Vidya Vox on Twitter and Instagram, and you can find her on Facebook at Vidya Vox Music. And while you're there, don't forget to check us out at Desi Outsiders on all social media channels. You can also send in your thoughts, comments, and feedback to mail@desioutsiders.com. And please don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes.
So until next week, I'm Ankita.
And I'm Meenal.
And we are the Desi Outsiders. Shri Rani Dharavar Muni Mal Vijay Shri Rani Dharavar